already. Shabbat Shalom. And Shabbat Shalom for those who will be listening with us later. It's our first Shabbat here at the school, and a message I was planning on giving, I thought this would be a great time to give it, is called Communal Living, Having All Things in Common. So one of the blessings that you get when you come to the school, we're doing the school now, this is 14th year since we started doing the school, and it's kind of like a added benefit to the school that people get to live in community. And like I said, from the beginning, it's something that never had to talk about, never really had, it just automatically happens when brethren are together. I mean, bonds that were made, friendships forever, it's just a great time to live together. But now, over the last couple of years, the fact that we're literally starting real communities, real kibbutzes, some of them small, you know, with just 20, 30 people, others very big, with hundreds and hundreds of people. But since it's the direction that Yahweh is taking the congregation, I thought it would be really great now to give a message like this within that context. Because before giving a message like this, it's saying this is something we need to be looking forward to. Now it's something we're doing. So it's a whole different concept. And even when we go out this week on Kibbutz Day, to me, I'm excited about it because it's the first time we're going with active kibbutzes. So before I'm going, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, oh, I need to take these notes of what we need to be looking to do. Now, as we're doing the kibbutzes, it'll be a whole different situation. So just to give a tiny bit of background in the kibbutz movement. We'll talk more about this Thursday when we go out. But the kibbutz movement started from the late 1800s. Theodore Herzl, who is the father of Zionism, he started the first Congressional Jewish Congress, I believe it was in 1897, from Austria. And that's what started the idea of Jews wanting to come back to the land and work the land. And like I say, the kibbutz model, we can look at that model in a lot of good ways. There's a lot of positive things to look for the model, but it's not a biblical model. It did not start out, it's not a religious model. The model is communistic. Most of the early kibbutz members were youth. They're between 18 and 25. They're coming from Russia, from Ukraine, from these areas. So it's not starting out as a religious movement. So Zionism in itself is not a religious movement. It's a movement in modern times of Jews wanting to come back and work the land. Now, what would you think? Would you think that their parents and their grandparents would think, wow, my grandchild wants to go back to the land of Israel, and they're going to support them? Absolutely not. The parents actually disowned the children that came here. And like I said, there were very, very few older people that came. Most of them were young. There were a few older people, but that's the way it started. So I'll talk about that more later. I'm not going to talk about too much today because we'll be there. We'll be there where the Kinneret Court, where the very first people, it wasn't even a kibbutz. It was a training center, almost something like we have here, just to train them for agriculture and communal living, and that developed into what we know today as the kibbutz movement. We'll be going to the very first kibbutz, the Degania, and we'll be seeing that, as well as religious kibbutz, and talk about how the kibbutz movement is going today. But the whole point of the kibbutz was communal living. It's that there's equality of everybody, and that everything was in common. So that's the model. It's not the way kibbutz is today in Israel. Very, very few kibbutzes are like that, if any. Most of them have been privatized, which means it's not communal at all. But that's the way it started. It started out that there was no private ownership of property, which is actually a kingdom principle, if you have it in the right perspective. So I like to tell the story. That's a true story that happened in the early kibbutzes, where the people were working in the fields, and there was a young girl who was getting married, and her family sent her this beautiful wedding dress, and all of a sudden, as she's working in the field, she looks over, and she sees in the next field that another young girl is wearing her wedding dress. So she runs over, and she's wondering. She says, "Why are you wearing my wedding dress?" And she says, "You mean our wedding dress. Because even clothes You'll see it when we go to Kibbutz Levi. Nobody has private clothes. That when you need clothes, you just go to, if you're a man, you go to the man's side, you're a woman, you go to the woman's side. You need a shirt, pick a shirt. You need pants, you pick pants. So it's not that you're being, when I say that in the kibbutz, in the kingdom mindset, it's not that private ownership is a punishment. You're not allowed to have private ownership. The reason why you don't have private ownership is there's nothing you need. You know, if you need a car, you'll see there's 100 cars, take one. You need clothes, take one. So everything is provided the same way in the kingdom mindset. When the kingdom comes, we will not own anything because Yahweh is the owner of everything, but everything we need, He will provide and then some. So far be it from a punishment, collectively working together, that means there's strength because, say, take for instance a car. Maybe I can only afford one car that's old, and if that car breaks, I got to fix it, I got to maintain it. But in the kibbutz mindset, there's 100 cars there, and they're all good, and they're all maintained, right? Somebody is maintaining those cars. So when I need it, that car is ready, it's gassed, it's ready to go. All I have to do is sign it out and take it. So the kibbutz model is we have to think about that. I'd say it's the same way with the word sacrifice. The word sacrifice in English connotates giving something up, but the word sacrifice, korban, in Hebrew is not giving up, it's drawing closer to through relationship. So we want to put a Hebraic mindset to this because I know being in the faith for 35 years, I'd say at least for 25 years, brethren have talked about living in community. And when we had a congregation in America, right before we left Babylon, it was a very strong congregation. We used to meet almost every day of the week. And that was where we really started getting into holiness. Everybody got rid of their TVs. And we would get together. It was always be for encouragement, for prayer, for singing together. And even that congregation who wanted to live in community, they wanted to go get land and live together. I said, we're not ready yet. We're not ready yet. Because every community I've seen that tried to do this, it fell apart. And why? Because of human nature, self-righteousness, pride, selfishness, people wanting their own way. And as long as you have that, you're never, ever, ever going to work in a communal setting. But today, right, here we are in June 2018, really going into July now, 2018. And in July 2018, it's working. We literally, it's working. And now we're doing this for several years. It's blossomed, and now it's ready to go to a next step. Now it's ready to be where, wow, we need to get training to this. We need to be more organized because these things are growing into cities, literally. I mean, we have some kibbutzes with more than 600 people. It's like a city. So there has to be organization. Just like with Moses, when he said there's captains of thousands, captains of hundreds, captains of tens. And that's where I'm going to use the gifts that Yahweh's given me, the gifts of administration, to start organizing this better, because this is where Yahweh's going now. This is in preparation for the kingdom. And that's the way Yahweh works. I know in my own personal life, before He gave me the position I was in, He had to try me for years. And He did. And test me to see, will I be faithful, you know, or will I turn away from this after a short period of time? And that's the way Yahweh is with all of us. He is not going to give you immortality unless He knows for sure that you'll never turn away from His way. So now, with this movement that is going to be the movement in the millennium and forever, if we don't embrace this now and start changing, you're not going to be there in the kingdom. It's very simple. There will not be one Laodicean in the kingdom. Not one. There may be some Laodiceans that repent and change, but he who separates himself seeks his own desire. Nobody will come into the kingdom with his personal mindset, how his way is going to be done, and okay, you know what, you have your community here, I'll live across the street, in my house, I'll have my own things, and I'll come and visit you and get fellowship. It will not work that way. So we have to learn. So this is a really important message for the times we're living in. Actually, the first kibbutz was not in Degania in 1910. That's the first kibbutz in modern times. The first kibbutz was in Qumran. You know, we didn't have the opportunity with our group to go down there, but I love to go down there because that's literally the first community. It's the first kibbutz. And I say that if The Dead Sea Scrolls were found on the very evening before they voted for Israel to become a nation. Can you imagine that in 70 AD, as they're being destroyed and they're being sent into captivity, they hide these scrolls in these caves. They're there for 2,000 years. Nobody touches them. They're perfectly safe. And on the very night that they're ready to vote for Israel to become a nation, they find them. I mean, it's just shocking to think. If you don't think that's important, wow. So there's a message in those scrolls for us. And that's what we find out, that these people who were called the Yahad, that's why the school is called HaYahad, the togetherness. The people who were called the Yahad, if they had found that before 1910 when the kibbutz started, it wouldn't be called kibbutz. It would be called Yahad, because that's the name of the community, the Yahad, the togetherness. And I say, if you look at the community of the people in Qumran, 450 people, right? And they had judicial order. They trusted the leaders. Anything that was done, they followed. Nobody complained. And they had a very strict way of living together, that if the people didn't follow it, you would get kicked out. And yet there's no records of anyone ever getting kicked out. When somebody wanted to join the community, there was a trial period, about a year, right? And at the end of that year, every member had to vote. And if 449 voted for the new person to join, but one member voted no, the person wouldn't come. Because if you even have one person who's contrary, you're not going to have ikad. You're not going to have unity. And that's what we have to think about in the camp. Because sometimes people say that. There's somebody who could be rebellious. They're against judicial order, right? And somebody might say, well, I never saw that. And I'm thinking, well, that's probably because you're not the leader. So somebody that can be against leadership, they're going to look to bow to the people, just like Absalom looked to bow for the people. What did he do? He sat in the gate and he looked for all the people that were against King David, you know? And then when he got enough of them, that's when he rebelled. And that's what happens. And that's why in this kind of setting, we want to make sure every single person is ikad. Every single person has equal value. Every single person has worth. But also every single person is going to work. It's not a welfare system. It's not a place to come for welfare. It's a place where all of us are using those gifts together. And how wonderful it is. We're only here a short time now, right? But I hope you're enjoying it. And you really, to me, I look and I say, how great my life would be if this was every day. That we're here every day doing this, you know? We're all using our gifts. But the very first one, like I said, was in Qumran. And here's the answer to Qumran, right? Because you could look at Qumran, and again, out of the scrolls, one-third of the scrolls are Bible scrolls, one-third of the scrolls are commentaries on the Bible scrolls, and one-third of the scrolls are community rules, how the people lived, you know? And maybe if we have time, we'll get into that because it's very interesting. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter what they believed or what they didn't believe. The important thing to me is, it worked. It worked. 450 people, and they were there for 280 years, and no problems, and it worked. It worked. It didn't fall apart. You know why? Because every single person was convicted of that system. The same as I say with the Amish. I'll be talking about that soon. But it's the same thing. How could the Amish for 400 years still live that way? They have no hierarchy. They don't have a council of elders. They have an elder over each situation. How on earth, after 400 years, can they still be riding in buggies, wearing the same clothes, still without electricity? Because they're convicted. Because it works for them. So that's why I say, you can mock them, you can say this, for Qumran, Amish, whatever. But at the end of the day, if everyone is convicted of something, it works. And that's what we get. And that's why, in a community, you can't let somebody there, you know, the mixed multitude, who has an uneasy spirit, who wants to go around, the Absalom, that wants to go around putting in the ears of whatever. And granted, it doesn't mean that if there's problems, you don't talk about them. That's why in communities, you meet every week. You meet or every month or whatever it is, and you talk in a community. If there's problems, you fix them. If there's any kind of problems, you do it. But what you don't try to do is you don't try to build rebellion. You don't try to put sides, because if a community is a kad, that means there's one side. You know, there's Yahweh's side. That's the only side we all want to be on. We don't want to make divisions. You don't want to make sides. And once you do that, you don't have a community anymore. You know, now you have a trouble. So this is where we're starting from. We're starting from that point. And like I said, even more than the kibbutz movement here, I like to say we look at the group in Qumran, the Ya'ad, and then the weeks to come, really the Amish more that looking at. Why is it working for them? Because the kibbutz movement, although physically we can see how they put it together, and it's a good system how they work things, like you might wonder, how do they do this on the Sabbath? How do they do that? When we go there, ask these questions. So you could find out systematically from the kibbutz movement how it works, but the kibbutz movement is not a sanctified movement. It's not a movement that was coming out of the world. It's not a religious movement. So it's limited what we can learn from the kibbutz movement. Where the other movements that we see were religious movements. They were movements toward the Torah. They were movements to say sanctified away from the world. So that's where we want to look at those movements to see more as a community, what do we need to be doing? So let's go to Acts 2 and verse 44. Because like we said, Yahweh works in the circular, right? And the very, very first community in Jerusalem was like this. And now we're the last community, right? Before Yeshua returns. And Yahweh is restoring to this community, just like that community. We've come full circle. And what a blessing to be part of what Yahweh is doing. And again, I would have never thought of this in a million years. I've never done it. It's not a concept to me. It wasn't on my mind. It wasn't something I planned out. And that's why I knew this is Yahweh. This is Yahweh that's doing it. Yahweh is moving this with his people. And this is, as we're going to see, the way he's going to protect his people through the time that's coming. Acts 2 and verse 44. And all the believers were echad. Echad, right? Unified. A man shall leave his mother and father and cling to his wife, and the two become echad. They become one in mind, one in soul, one in purpose. And that's the way we need to be in a community. We need to be one in mind, one in soul, one in purpose. The motto of the kibbutz, give everything you have, only take what you need. And where the problems come from is where you're taking everything you want and you're only giving what you want, which is nothing. That's where you're going to have a problem. You got to have that model of giving everything you have, only taking what you need. And they sold possessions and goods and distributed them to all according as anyone had need, right? Just like in the wilderness with the manna. And continuing steadfastly with one mind, day by day in the sanctuary, and breaking bread from house to house, they shared food in gladness and simplicity of heart. And they were praising Yahweh while finding favor before all the people. And every day our master would add to those who lived among the congregation. Wow. Wow, what a testimony. You know? I look at that and I'm like, man, do I want to be there. And here we are. We have opportunity to have the same kind of community as they did. And even more, because now is the end time. Yahweh's Spirit is being poured out. We have the opportunity to finish something maybe they couldn't finish. So if we go to Acts 4 and verse 31. Acts 4 and verse 31. And they having prayed, the place in which they were gathered was shaken. And they were filled with the Holy Spirit and the word of Elohim with boldness. The assembly of those men who were believing had but one soul in one mind. And no man among them concerning the possessions that he possessed would say that they were his. Rather, everything that they had was in common. So here it is again. When Yeshua says, unless you forsake everything, you can't be my disciples. It doesn't mean give everything out to the Salvation Army or somewhere and then we're all dependent. Because then every one of us would be dependent. What he's saying is, don't have a mindset of possession. Whatever I have, it belongs to Yahweh, and I have to use it. And that's what they're doing here. Everything was common. So there was nothing to, oh no, don't use that. That's mine. You know, that coffee pot's mine. Don't go near it. Don't go near it. No, it's there for whoever has the need for it at the time. And with great power, the apostles were testifying of the resurrection of the Master Yeshua, and great grace was upon them all, right? Yahweh's grace, Yahweh's unmerited pardon because of their spirit. And there was no man among them who was lacking, for those who had possessed fields and houses would sell them and brought the price of whatsoever was sold and laid them at the feet of the apostles, and it was distributed to each according to any had need. And Yosef, the one surnamed Barnabas by the apostles, which being translated son of comfort, a Levite, a Cypriot by race, a field being his, selling it, he brought the proceeds and placed them at the feet of the apostles, right? So this is where we have to do better in that kibbutz model. We have to think, you know, nobody had need. And again, everybody has to work, right? But when we're only living in community, meaning we all live near each other, that's a good start. And that's something we should be going for, living near brethren. But in that case, what happens when you have a widow who has no income and she has rent to pay, right? Sometimes it can even be a young widow, right? What do you do? It's hard, or a family. And sometimes, you know, it can be aware because it's like, oh, you know, this family's constantly in money problems. We constantly have to help and we can't do it either. So that's why I say living near each other is a good start. But really, it's got to be the community, because in the community, now everything really is in common. And now you don't have to worry about a 75-year-old woman who washed the feet of the apostles her whole life and served, that we want her to pay rent. How? That's a shame. That's a shame to the congregation at the same rate. Who's going to pay her rent? Someone's got to pay the rent. But if you're living in community, there's no rent. It's all coming from one pot, you know? And as that pot comes together, you'd be surprised. Like I say, in Ethiopia, these people that started South Sudan, they are the poorest people in the world. They're refugees under the UN refugee program. So you're starting with nothing. You own virtually nothing. When they come together for the kibbutz, a whole bunch of nothing became 138 goats, you know, 98 cows from nothing. You know, because you bring hundreds of people together. Maybe each one only has one goat, but you put it together, and a lot of nothing means something. And that's the point that I always say, that I love the saying. It was at this conference I went to several months ago at the Knesset, where they were talking about the rise of anti-Semitism and things. And the motto of the conference was, the sum of the matter is worth more than the individual pieces. And it's true. You know, when you're adding 7 plus 7 plus 7, every individual number is only a number. Together, the sum is always worth more than the individual numbers. And it's the same with us. Individually, we're only worth so much. Collectively, it's always going to be more. So the synergy of true brethren living together, you know, and it comes back to pain or pleasure. Because some people have lived with false brethren or lived with Laodiceans, and they hear this and they say, I want no part of it. I'm not going to risk it. I'm going to put my money in, and the next thing you know, it's going to fall apart, and then what do I do? I'll be broke. The past doesn't equal the future. We can't think about what happened in the past, but we do have to learn by it and be more cautious. And that's why I say we can't be afraid to say, no, there's requirements to live in this community. And we don't want a mixed multitude, as we're going to see here. We want people that are one mind, one goal, one spirit. And then you will not have those problems, I'll guarantee you, because now we're doing it, and we see it. We see it in the masses, by the hundred, when the Spirit of Yahweh is there and everyone is yielding to that Spirit, you don't have those problems. But all it takes is like it says, one bad apple rottens the core. If you have one person or one family that's only coming in for selfish reasons, you're going to have a problem. And that's why you have to have judicial order. There has to be elders, there has to be counsel that can handle these things when these problems arise. But again, if we are all like the people in Qumran, you know, like the Amish, if we all have one mind and one spirit and one purpose, you're not going to have these kind of problems. Corinthians 1 in verse 10. 1 Corinthians 1 in verse 10 says, now I beseech you, brothers, through the name of our Master Yeshua Messiah, that you all say the same thing and there be no divisions among you, but you be united in the same mind and with the same judgment, right? You know, that we're supporting each other, we're helping each other, and we're looking at the things of others more than the things of ourselves. And it works, because the Spirit of Yahweh will magnify that way. Real unity only comes when everybody is displaying the mind of Messiah. So again, individually, we have different spiritual gifts. We have different likes and dislikes. That's fine, because we're not rubber pencils. But the mind of Messiah, there's only one spirit. So when it comes to spiritual things, we should all be thinking the same way. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9 says, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fail, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to him, the one that falls, and there is not another to lift him up. also if two lie together, then they have warmth. But for one, how is he warm? And if the one overthrows him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly torn apart. The synergy. I love that scripture because that really shows, like I said, Yahweh is a family. Yahweh is a community, and this is where he's moving. And again, he who separates himself seeks his own desire. The people that separate themselves from the congregation, maybe they show up here and there, maybe they show up at a feast, you know, just seeing what they can get, but they're not part of the body. They're not there looking to be part of something big that Yahweh is doing in the end time. And my question to people like that is, how will you ever be in the kingdom? It's totally contrary to a kingdom mindset. How will you ever, ever enter the kingdom of Yahweh with that mindset? Because it's really, you're making an Elohim out of yourself. We have to have that mindset of submission, the mindset of serving and helping. Nehemiah 13. And verse 1. Because like I said, the death knell, the Achilles heel of community living is the mixed multitude. On that day they read in the book of Moses in the ears of the people. This is Nehemiah 13:1. This is after they're coming back to the land. And what's happening? Some of the people are going again with unbelievers, mixed multitude. And it was found written in that the Amorite and the Moabite should not come into the congregation of the Elohim forever. Because they did not meet the sons of Israel with bread and water, but hired Balaam. We just read about Balaam, right? But hired Balaam against them to curse them. But our Elohim turned the curse to blessing. And it happened when they had heard the Torah, they separated all the mixed multitude from Israel. And if you look at the Israelites, I probably should give a message one time just on the mixed multitude. If you look at the Israelites, what caused their problems? Their problems were caused by the mixed multitude. It was the Egyptians and the mixed multitude that came with them that caused the problems and turned them away from Yahweh. And you can't have a sanctified camp with a mixed multitude. You simply can't. You know, it can't work that way. So what happens? What happens if somebody has unconverted husband, unconverted? Unfortunately, they can't join the kibbutz. They can't be part of it. They can maybe live close to the kibbutz. Just like even in Qumran, it was only men. They were only priests. Their families lived below them. But if you bring unconverted people into a sanctified area, it's not sanctified anymore. You know, it's like in Haggai. If a priest takes sanctified porridge, you know, in his skirt, and he touches something that's unsanctified, does the unsanctified become sanctified? No. But if he takes that sanctified porridge, that Kodesh, that holy porridge, and he touches something unsanctified, does the sanctified become defiled? Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And so is this nation, and so is this people before me. So in a communal kibbutz setting, you simply can't have living there people that are not first fruits. You can't have people that are not with the program because it'll never work. It'll be the death knell of it. Romans 13 in verse 1. Romans 13 verse 1. And like I said, it amazes me when I look at the people in Qumran that for all those hundreds of years, it worked because the people believed in it. Didn't mean the leaders were perfect. Didn't mean every decision they made was right. But they knew that if we get out of the system, if we start complaining about an answer, if we start breaking it down, we're left with nothing. Because we clearly see that. Put a few hundred people together with no leadership whatsoever, you know, and you're going to have total chaos because everybody. But at least with leadership, if you trust the leadership, right, you know, at least like I say, all I want is a forum for justice. I don't want to be right every time. I don't want my way. I just want a forum. And I remember when I was in Church of God, I had a situation where I had a business. I had brethren working for me. So I owned the equipment, and one of the workers, who was one of the brethren, asked to borrow my truck on a Sunday for nothing to do with work, something personal. He went out with my truck, and he broke my windshield. So I felt, well, you're not using it for work. You're using it for personal. You should pay for that. And he felt, well, you know, I work for you. I don't believe I should pay for it. So we went to the elders, and the elders agreed with him. Now, I believe from Scripture, I can show you in the Torah where it clearly says you take somebody's property and you it gets defiled or broken, you have to reimburse that person. So I felt that was right, but when the minister said that, I was fine with it. I had no problem, I had no animosity, I wasn't bitter. All I wanted was an avenue to go to for justice, and that was the justice that came. And it says in Deuteronomy 17, you know, when you go to the elder and the elder says something, that's it. You don't look to the right or the left. So that was my justice. And you know what? Maybe I learned more from that by not getting my windshield fixed than getting it fixed. Because sometimes things don't go our way. And all I know in my mind, man, I start getting mad or thinking this person was against me. The next thing I know, I'm going to get bitterness toward the leadership. Maybe I'm out of the congregation. And I was not going to allow that to happen. You know, because that's not an alternative for me. I was in Church of God for 13 years. There were good elders, bad elders. When there was an elder that I thought, you know, this person may not be totally right with Yahweh, all I did was stay to the right, turn, you know, just be away. I wasn't going to get involved because I knew a couple of years he's gone. But if I get the wrong attitude and I'm out of the congregation, where does that leave me? I'm done. I'm only going to fall away. I'm only going to get more bitterness. I'm going to get these things in my head where I'm thinking I'm right, where I can't be right. Because the answer is never to be outside the camp. That's never an answer. You never see that in Scripture once. That is not a viable alternative, to be outside the camp on my own, making all my own decisions. It'll never, ever turn out good. And I can say in all my years in the congregation, in all my years in ministry, I have never, ever seen one situation where someone survived outside the camp in a good way. You see people that were with you, and next thing you know, they're dressing immodest, they're doing these things. It never turns out good. Because there's one camp, there's one Ikat camp, the camp of Israel. And that's why in this mindset, even if something doesn't go your way, learn by it. Learn by it. You know, it's a way maybe just to humble ourselves. You know, you gotta keep your priorities there. So what? So I gotta pay a windshield or whatever it could be. You know, pride wants to be right, but the spirit of Yahweh is the spirit of humility. So this is so important because this is the thing that destroys a community, not big things. Because in the community, you're not going to see changes in the Sabbath or changes in this. What will destroy a community is that little cancer from pride of people not getting along. A little thing that happens that way. And that's why if we love our neighbor more than myself, because in the end, you know what I thought? Even though I felt I was right, I knew that man couldn't afford to pay the windshield. So in the end, I probably would have paid it anyway, you know. So I didn't care anyway. I thought, this man's working for me. He's working hard, you know. So that's fine. That's the end of it. We don't want to get this mindset where we're thinking we're right, because sometimes, even if you're right, you could be wrong. So even if you're right, you could be wrong. Everything is a test. And sometimes Yahweh will allow that just to see how will we react to it. We're living in an imperfect world. So judgment in this world won't always be perfect, but all we want is an avenue for the judgment. And we have that. You know, in our congregation, congregations are autonomous. They go to the local elder if there's a problem. If for some reason it can't be solved there, every country has their own board of elders for the country. If it doesn't solve there, it's bigger. They bring it to Jerusalem, to our five-man council. And at the end of the day, you know, that's it. Whatever the judgment is, we take it one way or the other, you know. And in the end of the day, if two people are having a judgment, someone's going to get good and someone's going to get not good. But at the end of the day, we're all one anyway. We're all one. And if we keep that spirit of Ikat, we're going to be better off. So this is what we see in Romans. We see this in Romans 13. Let every soul be subject to the higher authorities, for there is no authority except from Elohim. But the existing authorities have been ordained by Yahweh, so that the one resisting the civil authority, he's opposed the ordinance of Elohim, and the one opposing will receive judgment to themselves. Right? So, like I say, even if you're right, you're wind up wrong. Because Yahweh set the civil government there. Yahweh set the elders in the congregation, knowing that they're not angels, we're not perfect. So if you're going against the elder, you're going against Yahweh, like Moses said. What are we? We're men, you know. Your griping, your murmuring isn't against us. It's against Yahweh. So anytime we're murmuring, ultimately it's always against Yahweh, no matter what it may be. For the rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the bad. And do you desire not to fear the authority? Do the good, and you will have praise from it, right? For the ruler is a servant of Elohim to you for your good. But if you practice evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is a servant of Elohim, an avenger for wrath to the ones practicing bad things. Unfortunately, as elders, we have to make decisions sometimes to protect the brethren. Because of this, it is necessary to be subject, not only on account of wrath, but also on account of conscience. So I want my conscience pure. I want it free. I don't want my conscience thinking something bad of somebody else. So like I said, in the end, like the Apostle Paul said in Corinthians 6, why not be wronged? Why not be defrauded? You know? Some of the greatest lessons of humility I learned in my life was when evil people attacked me falsely. Not that I like it, you know, and you're going to try to stand for the truth. But at least, if you're humble, that's a good thing. Humility is never a bad thing. So we have to make sure that we're not standing against the judicial order that Yahweh puts, because then again, we're not against man, we're against Yahweh. Ephesians 4, Ephesians the 4th chapter. And praise Yahweh that he does have good, honest men and leaders in the congregation. We don't have a paid ministry, so people are doing it because they're convicted and they love Yahweh and they love the people, or they wouldn't be there. But in Ephesians 4 it says, "Then I, the prisoner of our master, exhort you to walk worthily of the calling in which you were called, with all humility and meekness, with longsuffering, bearing with one another in love, being eager to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace." Right? And that's the biggest thing I say as an ambassador of Yahweh. Our biggest job is as peacemakers. That's what ambassadors do. If there's war, that's going to come from the president, the foreign minister, the minister of war, or whatever it is, you know, military minister. But ambassadors, they're not there for war. You know, they're there for peace. That's what an ambassador does. And this is what Yahweh says. We want to be ambassadors by keeping the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body in one Spirit, even as you were called in the hope, one hope of your calling. One Yahweh family, one faith, one baptism, one Elohim and Father all, the one above all and through all and in you all. Wow. So here we see that Yahweh has a unity there. And there's a unity through his Spirit, but we got to fight our own spirit. Because our own spirit is not a spirit of unity. We see that in 2 Timothy 3 in the end time. In the end time, our human nature is filled with what? With pride and greed and lovers of money and lovers of self and all these things. And this is where we're coming out of the world and we receive the Spirit of Yahweh, but you still have the human nature in you. We have to fight it every day. And that's the blessing in the community setting. You're not alone. You have people there with you to love you and help you and support you. And you'll grow much, much quicker, you know. And there's safety. There's safety in the camp. There's safety with the people who love you. And then what he says in verse 11, he, Yeshua, assigned some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some shepherds and teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the building up of the body of Messiah, until we all may come to the unity of the faith and of the full knowledge of the Son of Elohim, to a full-grown man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Messiah, so that we may no longer be children, being blown and carried about by every wind of false doctrine of men, who through their craftiness are very skillful in deceiving people. And I say, praise Yahweh, that he's had a ministry for 2,000 years. You know, that, like I said, I didn't have to come up with the doctrines. He had them for 2,000 years. And praise Yahweh that simple things like the dead are asleep in the grave, there's not an eternal hellfire that people burn in forever, that you don't go to heaven when you die, you know, you're sleeping in the grave. And things like that, the Sabbath day. Praise Yahweh, there's no immortal soul, but the soul that sins, it will die. That all these doctrines were given to us because Yahweh had a ministry for 2,000 years that brought them down to us. Praise Yahweh for that. Matthew 25, verse 30. But like I said, kibbutz is not welfare system. It's a unity of the faith. It's all of us coming together. It's using our gifts and working in one. And it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful to see the body of Messiah work that way. But again, if somebody doesn't work, the man who doesn't work doesn't eat. That's what Scripture says. And we see this in the parable of the talents here. Matthew 25 and verse 13. Therefore be alert, for you do not know the day or the hour in which the Son of Man comes. Exciting scripture, but scary scripture too, right? Because we always have to be alert because of that. For it's like a man who went on a journey. He called his servants and delivered his possessions to them. And to one indeed he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each according to his ability. And he went immediately on his journey. That's what we talked about. We're going to learn what our spiritual gifts are so that we can come together. But nobody has all the gifts. It's not a one-man band. So each of us, when we come together in a community, you use your gifts, you use your gifts, I use my gifts, and then we're all working. And wow, now you have all those gifts. Now there's nothing lacking there because all the gifts are being used by Yahweh. So he gives this, he goes on the journey. I won't read the whole story. You know, the master comes back, and to the one who had 5 talents, he says, come near, I'll give you 5 more. The one that had 2, and he made 2, he gives him 2 more. But then the one who had the 1 talent, he did nothing with it. He was the one that looked for a welfare system. He was not looking for a community. And what does he say? Verse 24, and the one who received the talent coming up said, Master, I knew that you're a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you did not scatter. And being afraid going away, I hid your talent in the earth. Behold, you have what is yours. So well, if he really thought he was a hard man, he probably would have did something with it, right? Like he says, why not at least give it to the bankers at the table, and I would have got interest. So really, this person is using this as an excuse, you know, just like I said, there's sometimes, you know, that there's somebody, hey, you know, we need help. Well, I can't help you, you know, I got a bad back. Okay, well, if you can't help physically, then you know what? Come over here and you can use the computer for us. Well, I can't use the computer, my fingers hurt. Well, you know what? Then just come over here and maybe you can get some water. Oh, if my hand gets wet, you know, I'll shrivel up. And there's always an excuse. It's just somebody who's not looking to work. So again, we don't all do the same job, but everyone needs to work. So he says, verse 26, his master said, evil, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I do not sow and I gather where I do not scatter. Then you ought to have put my silver to the bankers, and coming I would have received my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to him that has 10 talents. For to each who has, more will be given, and he will abound. But from him who does not have, even that which he has will be taken from him. And throw the worthless slave into the outer darkness, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So we see here, we work much better when we work cooperative. I found out about something a few years ago. There's a bus company here called Eggert. I don't know if you've ever seen it, the green buses. But they have another company that was called Eggert U. It was like a subsidiary of Eggert. And what it was is, it was business owners. I think it was around like 10 or 12 different business owners that they had like a cooperative together. So individually, none of those owners had millions of dollars to start a big bus company, but they pulled their money together so they were all able to use the same offices, use the same buses, use the same resources, and they all were like 10% owner of it. And together, they had a real big company. I thought, wow, this is great. This is like the body of Messiah should be. You know, that individually, none of us have the gifts to have this big conglomerate, but together, we could do things that we could never do separately, right? Even individually, maybe not even one of us can buy a big property. But like I said, you put that little bit together, 138 goats and 98, you know, cows, it really can come to something. So it's the same way here. You want to be using that talent to multiply the fruit toward Yahweh, and then everybody benefits from it, right? Because then when the fruit comes, Yahweh is bearing the fruit, and everybody will be able to collectively get from there. 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 4. And what a beautiful, beautiful way that Yahweh has this. He says, there are diversity of gifts, but there's only one Spirit. There are diversity of ministries, yet Yahweh is first. And there are diversity of powers, but the same Elohim is working all in all. So we're not all the same people. We don't all have the same gifts, but we're all working toward the same function, just like a body. The finger doesn't do the same thing that the ear does, and the ear doesn't do the same thing that the leg does. but you need all those parts for the body to work. If we drop down to verse 11, he says, but the one and the same Spirit works all things, distributing separately to each as he wills. Even as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of the one body being many are one body, so also is the Messiah. For also we were all baptized by one Spirit into one body, whether Jews or Aramaeans, whether slaves or free, even all were given to drink into one Spirit. For also the body is not one member, but many. And if the foot says, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, on account of this, is it not of the body? And if the ear says, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, on account of this, is it not of the body? If all the body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If all hearing, where would be the smelling? But now Elohim has set the members, each one in the body, even as it has pleased him. But if all were one member, where would the body be? But now indeed, many are the members, but it is one body. And the eye is not able to say to the hand, I have no need of you. Or again, the head to the foot, I have no need of you. But much rather, the members of the body, seeming to be weaker, are necessary. And that's what happens. One thing is, if you have somebody that really is in need, somebody maybe that's blind or crippled, everybody wants to rally around it, right? Because everybody really wants to serve. And there's nobody that can argue with that. So sometimes the weaker members are there because they're actually stronger. I know it would be very hard for me to be handicapped like that, you know? But some people are strong enough that they can go through that and it doesn't hurt them. And the body comes together with that. And those of the body we think to be less honorable, to these we put more abundant honor around them. And our dishonored members we dress with greater care. But our valued parts have no need for attention. But Elohim tempered the body together, giving more abundant honor to the member having need. That there not be division in the body, but that the members might have the same care one for another. And if one member is in pain, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. And you are the body of Messiah and members in your respective places. So it's not enough when there's a problem to just say, I'll pray for you, right? It says this in the book of John. If somebody comes and they're hungry and you say, I'll pray for you, and you have the care to give and you're not giving it, what good is that? We have to care for one another. Unfortunately, sometimes you're giving more love by not giving to somebody. If it's somebody, I'm not saying someone that's irresponsible, somebody that's always running up dead, and then they're trying to take something. Sometimes the loving way is not giving. But I'm saying in general, if a brother or sister is in need, of course prayer is always important, but if we can help them, we want to help them if it's in our hands to do it. And that's important there. We're using our gifts together. Proverbs 6 and verse 6 says, go to the ant, lazy man, consider her ways and be wise. Who, having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her bread in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O lazy man? When will you arise out of your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to lie down. So shall your poverty come as one walking in your need like an armed man. So this is what, you know, Yahweh's saying. He's saying, here it is, as human beings, look to the ants, right? Here are these ants, and ants really are amazing. Because how do they do that? Everywhere you go, no matter how much you kill them, they always come back, and they come back in armies, and they're all in file and carrying and moving. And that's what Yahweh says to the lazy person. Look at the ants. You know, if the ant can do that, what are you doing? That's why I say, in a kibbutz, I believe some people, the only reason they don't want to join kibbutz is they don't want to be exposed. Because there are lazy people out there that don't want to work, and they don't want to be exposed. Others, they want to join the kibbutz because they're thinking they're going to get welfare, they're going to get a free ride. But we have to understand that what makes the kibbutz beautiful is that everybody has a purpose. Everybody gets to use their gifts. Everybody is working together. And the body of Messiah is one. And like it says, where one member hurts, they all hurt. Where one member is blessed, they're all blessed. And you know, the stories I hear from South Africa, it really inspires me for that. You know, that you know, one sister is sick or something and the other sister's coming over and help, or the brother's helping one person in this area or that area. It's very inspiring. It's very inspiring to see this happening on the ground. But again, like we said, we want to make sure everybody is functional in the kibbutz mindset. Philippians 2 and verse 1. Philippians 2 and verse 1. So then, if there is any comfort in Messiah, if any consolation of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any mercies and compassions, complete my joy by being in one accord, one love, one soul, one mind, doing nothing according to strife or self-glory, but in humility, let each regard his neighbor as better than himself. Let no one be mindful only of his own things, but let each one also be mindful of the things of his neighbor. For think this within you, which mine is also in Yeshua Messiah. And this is what makes the community work. That everybody is honestly, from the soul of their being, loving their neighbors themselves. And they're saying, I don't want something if my neighbor doesn't have it. And I've said this many times, that if I were to die today, I've had the greatest life that anybody could ever have. I mean, being a believer for 35 years, for being in ministry, for traveling around the world, I mean, I am so happy. I don't have one thing that I could complain, or one thing that I could tell Yahweh that I didn't have in my life. And at the same rate, I want the kingdom of Yahweh today. I want it today, because I know that there's other people that are hurting. I know that there are brethren in civil war. I know there's brethren without food. I know there's people that are struggling. So the fact that the way I'm living, I could do this for the next 10,000 years. I love it. I don't have one complaint in life, but it's not about me. And that's why I want the kingdom today, because I don't want to see one brother or sister hurting. I don't want to see one person in need. And it hurts me to my soul when I see people, especially that are my brothers and sisters, that are needing. And like I said, most of the times, it's not... In third world, they're really not so needy. They don't have a lot of mammon, but they don't need it. But there's times where they do. There's times where there's famines. There's times where there's storms. There's times where they're suffering. And it breaks my heart to see it. And praise Yahweh, in many of these situations, through the love of the brethren, that we're able to help them. We're able to help and bring need where possible. But we need to have this selfless attitude. That's what communal living is. It's to see that brother or sister as equal to you, as like yourself, not, you know, and if they're lacking in something, then you're lacking in something. At the same rate, Galatians 6, because the Bible says balance weights are the delight of Yahweh, and we want to make sure that we're balanced in this, because like we said, you don't want to create a welfare system. You want to create a system where everyone is productive, everybody is working. And Galatians 6 says, brothers, if any man among you goes before you in error, you who are in the Spirit, restore him by the spirit of gentleness, and beware lest temptation also come upon you. And you carry the excess load of one another, and thus be complete yourself in the instruction of Messiah. For if anyone thinks to be something, he deceives himself, being nothing. But let each one examine his own work, and then let him glory to himself and not among others. For each one will bear his own normal load. But let the one being taught in the word share with the one teaching in all good things. So here it says, right, in verse 2, you're to carry the excess load of one another, and thus complete yourself in the instruction of Messiah. But verse 5 says, for each one will bear his own normal daily load. So that's the point of it. Our daily living, we have to take care of ourselves. You know, like I said, the men have to take care of their wives and their children. We have to take care of our families. But where there's an emergency, somebody's house burns down, somebody's sick, somebody dies, we need to be there for help. So again, we don't create a welfare system, but we create a system of bonding, a system where we're there for each other, a system where nobody ever has to worry that in a tragedy or an emergency that we're not going to be there for them. And that's the beauty of it. And I'll tell you something. I am so honored to be the senior elder from Jerusalem to this congregation, because I see our brethren doing it all over the world. I hear stories all the time, and I see that we have people that truly love each other. And we might take it for granted because we think it's normal because we're doing it, but it's not normal, I'm telling you. Even between believers, Believe me, I travel all over the place outside of our congregation. There's a lot of congregations, nice people, but a lot of times people that are fighting, vindictive, you know. And what we see in Congregation of Yahweh Jerusalem, you don't see a lot of times outside of this. And it is heartwarming to see people with true love for each other. That's why I know the Spirit of Yahweh is moving there. And like I said, to literally be doing this, to be living together in love and servitude, is such a testimony, you know, to the Spirit of Yahweh. It's amazing. Democracy is not a kingdom mindset. So one of the things we have to do in the time we live in, we have to get out of this democracy or demonocracy, like I call it. We'll talk about this on Monday when we get into kingdom principles, you know, because democracy is simply ruled by majority, and we're not ruled by majority, we're ruled by theocracy, we're ruled by the word of Yahweh, we're ruled by the Torah and the Tanakh. And like I said, we have to get this idea of private ownership out of our mind, but the cares for other people. We have to get the kingdom mindset in caring for our neighbor as ourselves. 1 John 3 and verse 14. 1 John 3 and verse 14. He says, "We know that we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren. The one not loving his brother remains in death. Everyone hating his brother is a murderer. And you know that every murderer does not have everlasting life abiding in him. But this we have known, the love of, by this we have known the love of Yahweh, because that one laid down his life for us, and on behalf of the brethren, we ought to lay down our lives. But whoever has worldly possessions and sees his brother in need and shuts up his mercy from him, how is the love of Yahweh in him? My little children, let us not love in word or tongue, but in deed and truth." Right? So that's the point. Prayer is great. It's something we do every day of our life. But faith without works is dead. And when it's put into our hands to do something, we have to do it. And like I said, sometimes you're better off not doing it if it's going to hurt somebody by giving something. But I'm saying in a general sense of people in need, not somebody who is, you know, not working or milking the system or something like that. We're talking here basically of people struggling that have need within the camp and that we're there to help them. Because like I said, everything we have belongs to Yahweh. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 30 says, "And those weeping is not weeping, and those rejoicing is not rejoicing, and those buying as if they did not possess anything. And those buying as if they did not possess anything. And those who make use of this world is not abusing it, for the mode of this world is passing away." So this is what the Apostle Paul is saying, that we are to use without possessing. You don't have to feel guilty if Yahweh has blessed you with mammon. You know, feel blessed by it. Don't feel guilty, but use it for the kingdom of Yahweh. That's what he's saying, that nothing we have is our own. Everything belongs to Yahweh, and we want to make sure that we're using but not possessing. Because once you get into possession, you lost the kingdom mindset. And we know in the end time, Matthew 25, I'm not going to go there, but the parable of the sheep and the goats, in the end time, we're going to be rewarded depending on how we helped other people. You know, when I was naked, did you clothe me? When I was hungry, did you feed me? When I was in prison, did you visit me? When, Master, when? When did you do this? As you did to the least of my brethren, you did unto me. You know, we have hundreds and hundreds of people every year that write us from prison, and full congregations in prison. You know, and some of these people will never get out of there. You know, and are we praying for these people? You know, maybe even in the case where we could, it's not always easy, but visiting them. We want to make sure that we're treating each other the same way we would want to be treating, and we're caring for each other in that way. 1 Timothy 6:8-9. 1 Timothy 6:8-9 says, "But having food and clothing, let us be satisfied with these. But those proposing to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and hurtful lusts, which plunge men into ruin and destruction." Are we satisfied, you know, with food and clothing? He didn't even say shelter. He only said food and clothing, not even shelter. Let us be content. Are we content with that? Or is there always, you know, remember, one of the worst things to the Israelites in the wilderness And Corinthians 10 said, all these things are example for us today, was murmuring. Having a murmuring spirit, not being satisfied. And we should always be satisfied in all things. Because there's a blessing in everything, even when it doesn't go our way. Like I said, we're spirit beings in training, and life is a test. And every time we overcome, the test is there. Philippians 4 and verse 4, we always want to have the spirit of thankfulness. And it'll change your life. Because like I said, at the end of the day, we talked about this, your neural association. How you look at something is your reality to it. And I always say this, you know, what you necessarily think about something may have nothing to do with reality. It's just your thought. And if you have a negative mindset, everything will be negative. Absolutely everything. And that's why sometimes, you know, you could have a feast and one person comes and they come home. How was the feast? Oh, the feast was wonderful. It was great. And another person, how was the feast? The feast was terrible. It's their mindset. It's what they're focused on, you know. If their focus was only maybe on food and it wasn't the food they liked, or music, it wasn't the music they liked, instead of the big picture. So, again, we want to make sure our focus is on thankfulness. Philippians 4 and verse 4. Philippians 4 and verse 4. Rejoice in Yahweh always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your humility be known to all men. Our master is at hand. Wow, how exciting. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and by petition, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to Elohim. And the peace, right? Ambassadors of peace of Yahweh, which surpasses all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds through Messiah Yeshua. Finally, my brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honest, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever lovely, whatever of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is any praise, think on these things. And what things you learned and received and heard and saw in me, practice these things. And the Elohim of peace will be with you. But I rejoiced in Elohim greatly that you have continued to care for me, just as you have always cared, even though you yourselves have not had enough. Not that I speak as to need, for I have learned to be content in whatever state I am in. And I know what it is to be poor, and I know what it is to be rich. I have gone through many things and experienced many things, both to be filled and to hunger, both to have plenty and to be in need. I can do all things through Messiah, the one giving me the strength. What a powerful scripture. Remember that. Everything comes from Yahweh. So, like I said, I've been in situations in my life where I'm sleeping on straw in Africa, and there's situations where I'm coming home and I have an 18-hour layover and they give me a 5-star, $500 hotel and a Hyatt hotel. And I love them both. You know, believe me, I enjoyed the Hyatt. It was good food. But in some ways, I'd rather be on the straw in Africa because you're with the brethren. I love that. I love being with the brethren and seeing how they live and being with them. And, you know, as poor as they are, they'll give you the last piece of bread. They really, because they want to and they love you. So we always have to have a thankful heart. I grew up in a family that was very success-oriented. My uncles, my brothers, my father, that in their own business and doing things, and particularly one uncle of mine that had a lot of influence on me when I was young in business. And I told him a few years ago when we were in the States and I met him, I told him, I said, you know, Uncle so-and-so, I said, I realized that success is not wanting more, but it's being satisfied with less. That's what Yahweh put in my mind, because successful people are never satisfied. There's people that can have $50 million and they wind up losing everything. And you wonder, how could you ever do that? Why wouldn't you put $40 million in the bank and then, you know, invest your $10 million or whatever? How could you have that much money and go bankrupt? And it's because they're not satisfied. It wouldn't matter if they had $100 million, $1 billion, $2 billion. They're never satisfied. So that's not success. Success is not having more. It's being satisfied with less. It's being in your life content that wherever you are in your life, this is where Yahweh put you. This is what you have. And of course, you're always trying to better yourself and grow in the grace and knowledge of our Master Yeshua Messiah. But you're never wanting. You're never lacking. Because how can you be lacking with the Spirit of Yahweh in you? Right? It's like, it's so beautiful. Here we are. We're on a Sabbath. And it doesn't matter what your situation is, right? We're sitting in a room. We have clothes. We have shelter. We have food, we have each other, and it's the Sabbath day, right? What more would we need? there's an equality to that, that everybody can equally be blessed, everybody can equally be happy, and that's community. That's what community is all about. The last thing I want to get into before we end here is community is not just important for the kingdom, but this is the way I realized that Yahweh has shown me how he will protect his people in these last days. Revelation 13, we know, just going to read a few scriptures here. Revelation 13, we know that there's a beast power that's coming. There's a mark of the beast that's coming. I'll start in verse 14. And he deceives this anti-Messiah, those dwelling on the earth, because of the signs which were given to do before the beast, saying to those dwelling on the earth to make an image to the beast who has the wound of the sword and live. And it was given to put life into the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and make and might cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. And the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the freemen and the slaves, it causes that he gives them a mark on their right hand and in their foreheads, even that not any could buy or sell except the one having the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of its name. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding compute the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and the number is 666. So, wow, we know it. We're living in this time, any time now. This technology is here already. They already have the technology of chipping people. They're already doing it. And now, India, one of the biggest countries in the world, or the biggest, most people in the world, they are already going to cashless society. They already now got rid of their big money bills. They're only using small ones, but they're using, everybody is chipped and they're going to cashless society. It's here, it's coming. And how on earth will you get through if you can't buy or sell? Doesn't matter if you work, you're going to get, you know, a piece of paper. What are you going to do? Your boss isn't going to give you sacks of grain. He's going to give you papers of money. And the way that Yahweh is going to get his people through is communal living. That's the way he's going to do it. Because communal living, like looking at the kibbutz or looking at the Amish, they don't need anything from the outside. They're totally self-sufficient. Because individually, I only got one or two gifts. Collectively, we can do everything. We have all the gifts we need. This is the way that Yahweh is going to do it. Revelation 3, 7 and 8. Revelation 3, 7 and 8. And the messenger of the congregation of Philadelphia write, these things says the Holy One, the true One, the one having the key of David. He's given us the key of David, his people. The one opening and no one shuts, and shuts and no one opens. I know your works. Behold, I have given a door being opened before you, and no one is able to shut it, for you have a little strength, but you have kept my word and not denied my name. How important is the name? Extremely important. You compromise with the name, you use Yahweh with the brethren, you use God and Jesus outside, you're not going to be a Philadelphian. Philadelphians don't compromise. Verse 10, because you kept the word of my patience, I will also keep you out of the hour of trial which is going to come upon all the world in order to try those dwelling on the earth. Behold, I come quickly. Hold what you have, that no one take your crown. This is the promise to the Philadelphian. And now Yahweh has shown me in the last few weeks how to get the Philadelphia model. And this is something this summer I hope to bring out, because now we know it. Now we know the Philadelphian model, but it's a matter if you want to do that sacrifice that it takes to be part of it. But the Philadelphian is the one that's protected. None of the other congregations are. So you're going to have to choose. We're going to put the models out for these seven congregations. And you know what? You're going to fall in one of them, just like the message I gave, a message of Yeshua to you. So if you're a believer, one of these messages is to you. And now you'll get to choose. If you want to be a Philadelphian, you're going to get the right to choose to be one. But you're going to have to sacrifice. And it might not be easy. There'll have to be changes made in your life. But in the end, it'll be well worth it. Because there's no greater joy than communal living. The last scripture we're going to go over here is Psalm 133. A song of ascents of King David. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brethren living together, even in unity. It is like the precious oil on the head that ran down on the beard, Aaron's beard going down to the mouth of his garments. Remember, what is this oil? This is the anointing oil, right? This is the Melchizedek priesthood. And this is what this unity does. It's bringing us out as Melchizedek priests, like the dew of Hermon, Mount Hermon, coming down on the mountains of Zion, for there Yahweh commanded the blessing forevermore. Was he talking about Mount Hermon, the highest mountain in Israel, the only place we get snow in the winter all year? It's a sponge. And all the water comes into there, the snow comes into there like a sponge, and as it melts, there's three tributaries that come down to the Jordan River. And that's what he's talking about here, like the dew coming down in the mountains of Mount Zion. There, Yahweh commanded the blessing forevermore. That it's a sponge, it's an enormous amount of water gushing out, not like the end here in the Jordan River that looks like a creek. But when we go up to Tel Dan, you'll see it. If you went in the Jordan there, you die. It's gonna roll you out, because that's the water coming from Mount Hermon. How good and how pleasant for brethren together to live in unity. The communal living, the kibbutzes, is working in the congregation of Yahweh Jerusalem in many places, and many more to come. Like I said, we're working on two new ones right now, and hopefully more to come by later this year or next year. It's a kingdom mentality. Not everything, like I said, is modeled after kibbutz, because kibbutz is not modeled for sanctification. So we have to look for other models for that. Give everything you have and only take what you need is a kingdom mindset that we all need to learn. In the kingdom, our whole focus will be outgoing concern for others more than ourselves, and that when one suffers, we all suffer. When one is blessed, we're all blessed. The community model helps us to lose our own selfish ambitions. We should only have an opinion on what pertains to our own judicial order, and we should be supporting each other in our jobs of lifting and helping, and above all, giving thanks to Yahweh in everything, for this is truly the kingdom mindset. Yahweh is uniting his people worldwide through kibbutzes and communal living in preparation for his soon coming kingdom. And we need to be preparing for this, as it's the end time model, by growing in humility, losing self, and caring for the needs of our brethren in prayer and substance more than ourselves. So, wow, what a great time to live in. What a great time to be part of this congregation. That very first congregation that we read about, Acts 2, Acts 4, is the only time in history that we ever see this in 2,000 years. And now, as everything is going in circular motion, that we are blessed to be part of a movement that Yahweh is doing for his very kingdom, which shows how close that kingdom is. So it's a blessing to have each and every one of you with us today. Yahweh bless. Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.